Many believe that a healthy 21st century economy will thrive at the hands of the tech industry. But my guest this hour says when you look at that industry, you don't see many women and minorities. And this hour will explain why and how that can change. Good morning. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:07 on Wednesday, January 22nd. While women make up about half of our population, only 18% of high school students who take the AP Computer Science exam are women. Only 8% of students are Hispanic and 4% are African American. This hour we ask, what is lost by the lack of diversity in the tech field? And more importantly, what's to be gained by getting more women and minorities in the door? We hope you'll join the conversation this hour. The phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. My guest this hour is Barbara Erickson, the Director of Computing Outreach at the College of Computing at Georgia Tech. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So how did you discover this technology and gender gap in the first place?
By examining the Advanced Placement Computer Science data to see how many people are taking the exam, what genders, what races.
And what did you find? Tell us a little bit about your data there.
Well, so looking at the overall, the national picture, certainly women are underrepresented in computer science, and that's been known for a long time. In fact, it's one of the few fields that's lost women over the years. In the mid-'80s, it was about 36% female. Now, a lot of the number of women graduating from undergraduate with STEM, with computer science degrees is only about 20%. So unlike a lot, most of the other fields where women number percentage of women is increasing over time, we've actually been losing women.
Why is that?
Well, that's a good question. I think some of it goes back to, if you remember, I said the mid-'80s was sort of the high point. That's when the personal computer first came out. It's also the beginning of the startup culture. And mm-hmm. The startup culture is very high risk, high reward, lots of hours, which was much more appealing to men than to women. The personal computers often came home with a dad's machine. You know, dads would bring them home, and so it sort of became, oh, those are dad's machine. The Game Boy came out in that time period. Games came out that were aimed at males, for males. My daughters, when they were growing up, said, where's the game girl?
Hmm.
Yeah, that certainly gives you the impression that that's for boys only.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. We had a Game Boy when I was younger, but I didn't think of it as marketed toward boys. So how much is that a perception versus the active marketing?
Oh, perception is, of course, the important part of marketing. That's what people do, is try to make sure that you're thinking along certain lines. I'm not sure exactly what you mean by that. Mm-hmm. Marketing.
Yeah, well, I guess I should say, we shouldn't assume that there was intent, I suppose, by the developers of the game to market specifically to boys, but I just wondered if that was a possibility.
Oh, well, the game industry is overwhelmingly male, and you tend to make for people like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So for a long time, yes, a lot of the games that came out were aimed at young males.
Mm-hmm.
That's why certain games took off, like the Wii, because finally here was a game that other people could play.
So what factors are leading into the situation that we have now where you say that a majority of the students that are studying computer science or taking the AP computer science exam are white males? What is at hand there?
Well, there was a nice study from WGBH and ACM, the Association for Computing Machinery, that asked a whole bunch of college-bound teens, what are your perceptions of computer science? And not surprisingly, 77% of the boys that they talked to said that computing jobs were good or very good for someone like them, whereas for the girls, only 22% said that. So that shows a big gender gap before they're even exposed to computer science, really.
Hmm.
And it's a lot to do with the stereotypes. You know, if I asked you, how many famous computer scientists could you name, how many of them would be women?
Hmm.
You know, they'd mostly be white males, right? So you probably would say Bill Gates, Steve Jobs. You might say people who founded Facebook or, you know, Mark Zuckerberg or, you know. So the problem, one of the problems is, of course, stereotypes and perceptions. The other problem that girls tend to associate computer science with being boring, antisocial, you know, nerdy, and all the nerd stereotype that we often see in the media.
Right.
And, of course, there are people like that in computer science, but they're certainly not the majority.
Yeah.
the stereotype that gets portrayed.
So is there a way to tackle those perceptions in school, for example, if some of the most famous computer scientists are people like Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg, and somehow they're portraying an image that might not seem favorable to young girls. What can be done to combat that?
Early exposure, I think, is key, and making sure that computer science is available. I mean, one problem is computer science is not very widespread. The access is not all universal, unlike calculus, for example. If you're somebody who wants to go into a STEM field, you can probably have access to calculus in most states and in most areas, but computer science is much smaller and tends to be offered in private schools or high-end suburban schools.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one problem of access. But how do you get people in? Once you have that, you have to work on those stereotypes. I know a teacher in Florida who had the typical class in computer science of mostly males, and only, you know, never had a female or maybe one female at a time. Those are the females that say, "That's okay if I'm in the all-guy environment." And then he went to a workshop where he learned techniques to improve that, how to recruit women, how to make sure that what he was doing was, his environment was not hostile to women, which is another problem in computer science. Sometimes the environment's hostile to women. And he's now 40% female. So teachers can make a difference. They can certainly encourage women. They can make sure that their environment is not hostile. That's an important step. You can recruit. One of the things we've done in Georgia is send letters to students who do well on the PSAT and encourage them, especially young women and minorities, to take computer science. And we target the letters based on the WGBH findings. So girls are usually more interested in careers that help people, versus boys are interested in careers that have, you know, high social cachet, can make a lot of money. So we target the letters differently for boys versus girls.
I see. What are some examples of how to maybe blend the two if women are attracted to vocations that help people? I'm thinking maybe nursing or teaching or something. How do you how do you blur the lines between that and computer science?
Oh, one great way is development of apps. You can encourage girls or anybody to think about what are apps they can create to help their area, their social group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people create apps to help pregnant women. A lot of low-income pregnant women don't get prenatal care, but you know, they have phones, so you can text them messages or use smartphones and give them other materials to explain to them, for example, at this point in your pregnancy, you should move your seatbelt below your belly so that, you know, here's the proper way to do this. So targeted, people are using cell phone apps to target obesity. How do you keep track of kids' activity and create games or other ways, social activities, to get them to exercise more and to sort of use peer pressure to help each other? So there's a lot of apps is a great way of trying to get people to think about ways to improve society using computer science. Robotics is another big way. You know, we have tons of robots being created, and we'll be seeing already robots are in the home with the little tiny vacuum cleaner one, but we'll see more and more of that over time. You'll have robots that are helping people that are disabled. You know, you could have a robot helping them. Computer science has just huge possibilities for helping people, but people don't often hear about those things.
We're talking with Barbara Erickson. She's the Director of Computing Outreach at the College of Computing at Georgia Tech. And we're looking for your questions, ideas, comments as well, and maybe your personal experience. Are you a woman or a minority in the tech field? Let us know. Tell us what got you interested in the first place and what kept you in the door. There are some pockets of the country that see zero women taking the AP placement exam. We'll talk about where that is and why that might be. You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org, and you can also find us at the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Barbara Erickson, the Director of Computing Outreach at the College of Computing at Georgia Tech, about the tech industry's race and gender gap, how it begins, why it continues to prevail, and what to do about it. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Barbara, you mentioned that one way to combat the racial and gender gap in the industry is to get early access to computers and debunking stereotypes and that sort of thing. Talk a little bit more in detail about what this start early strategy.
So at Georgia Tech, one of the things we do is offer computing summer camps, and we offer them every week we can, and they all fill. So we start with rising fourth graders, so pretty young. And one of the reasons we do that is to try to, you know, get interest early on before they've decided that's not for them. Kids often turn away from STEM fields, especially women in middle school. So if you can reach them before they've decided it's not for them and get them enough interest to sort of get them past that stereotype so that they can see now that stereotype's not true. This is fun. It is interesting. It is social. That can help. So another thing you can do is, you know, as we've been saying, trying to help the teachers in high school, because even though high school is a little late, they're past that time period, there are kids that are still interested in STEM, and so trying to get the ones who are interested in STEM into computer science, in telling them that computer science really has become a foundational field for most STEM fields. You know, biology, you couldn't map the human genome without computers. Physics, most people do simulations. Like at Georgia Tech, they have to program in physics class because they want you to simulate these things.
When we talk about exposing children to computer science, are we just talking about getting them to play computer games and to interact with computers? Or is it about actually picking things apart and doing some of that programming?
It's about creating, not just using computers. So not just playing a video game, but making a video game.
So what kinds of games are created by children, and how are you, what's gaming 101 to you?
Yes. So I would recommend the use of a free program called Scratch from MIT. It's been described as something that has a low floor. It's easy for anybody to get started, wide walls. You can do art, you can do music, you can do games, you can do all sorts of things in it, and a high ceiling, meaning that it doesn't get boring real quick. There's a lot of great things you can do with it. It's drag and drop programming, only requires a browser. You don't even have to download anything. So that's a wonderful piece of software that we've been using for years out of MIT's lifelong kindergarten group.
And it's something anybody could use, right?
Anybody can use, yep. It's been used all the way from, you know, eight-year-olds up to Harvard uses it to introduce computer science in their classes.
Does it take more than simply access to computers to get people attracted to it? Or what more do you do to enhance the experience and make it more appealing?
Well, as I said, you know, the summer camps help. Especially for girls, you want to make it a social thing. So individual people playing on their own computer is one way a lot of boys might get interested, but it's not a great way to get girls interested. Girls tend to be more social. So getting them in social environments, one of the things we do is work with Girl Scouts, or Black Girls Code is another organization that's been working on this issue. Cool Girls is a local to us, low-income group that we've been working with. So, you know, finding places where it's girls only and groups of girls and trying to create activities for them.
We've been talking a lot about the gender gap, specifically, you know, women not being as attracted to these types of fields as men statistically. What about racial minorities? I was looking at your numbers on African-American students and Hispanics. What accounts for the low numbers there, do you think?
I think the biggest issue, there's two reasons, right? The lack of access, especially majority-minority schools typically don't have computer science. So that's a big issue, lack of access. And the second issue is the stereotypes. We had an African-American male who came to one of our computing summer camps one year, and he told me the story later on, and he said, you know, he didn't even want to go. His mother had signed him up, and he's like, oh, I don't want to go to that computing camp. That'll be all those boring, geeky kids. Came, had a great time. He came again the second year. He took AP Computer Science, got a 3, which is passing but not stellar. It's graded out of 5. He came to Georgia Tech. He originally was not intending to be a computer scientist or come to Georgia Tech. He came to Georgia Tech undergrad, was most outstanding junior his junior year. So, and he said that he had faced lots of people saying, why are you going to computer science? There's no black people in computer science. But he said, no, I enjoy it. So that's a good example of the kind of thing that you can do with early intervention with somebody to show them, hey, no, this doesn't match the stereotypes. This is for you. And it's a real shame that we don't have more people in the field, because we're one of the fastest growing fields. There's projections that we're going to have a million unfilled jobs basically by 2020 in the area. We already have had a big problem with filling jobs. In Wisconsin, the estimates are that you'll have about 66% of future jobs could be filled with computing degrees. So it's a scary thing to say that here we have this great field where it's really interesting work. You can make good money in the field, but people aren't going into it, and especially not enough diversity in the field. There's a misunderstanding. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I was going back to your comment about how this young man gave it a try despite his prejudgments, I guess, about it, and discovered that he loved it. But I imagine that there was a mentor in his life, or someone who encouraged him to listen to himself rather than to think outwardly and think, well, there's no one like me over there. What role do teachers play in that regard?
Oh, teachers are definitely a big influencer on students. You know, teachers and parents, the kids that we do have in the tech field, it's not a shock if you look at the data that the areas that have a lot of tech jobs have the most people taking AP Computer Science, because they have influences from their families. They see people around them like them in that field. You know, it's the places that don't have as much jobs in the area that you don't see as many people. You know, Wisconsin's a good example of that. You have only 309 kids took the exam, but you have a similar population to Maryland, but Maryland had 1,629 kids take the exam last year. So that's quite a huge difference. But Maryland has a huge software industry.
Well, it's interesting. We have a major software developer here in South Central Wisconsin, and I'm sure there are other similar operations throughout our state. So it seems, at least it would seem to me, that there's a demand there. What could potential employers do to increase their effort to educate people about the field and get them interested alongside maybe the teachers and schools?
Oh, definitely there's a role for industry. You know, industry, one of the good things that Wisconsin has just done in December is they passed a law that allows school boards to count a computer science course as a math credit for graduation. So that'll really help. So industry should really be trumpeting that and visiting schools. When I get requests all the time to come visit for career days, and I can't go to all these. So industry folks should certainly be visiting their local schools and talking at career days about their field. They should be helping create summer camps for kids or early experiences for kids, especially girls and minorities. We have 100 Black Men in Atlanta, and they've been fostering, helping create robotic teams to work in the FIRST competition for years. So they've been trying to give back that way and try to encourage more minorities, and that's had a big effect in Georgia. So there's a lot that industry can do.
I was looking at your statistics. You mentioned that there were zero women who took this AP computer science exam in Mississippi, Montana, and Wyoming. Why does that concern you, and what does that mean for the areas up there?
Well, in some of those areas, they had nobody take the exam or very few people take the exam. But what's sad about that is that's not always been the case. People might say, oh, that's just, you know, Wyoming has nobody. But no, a few years ago, 35 kids took the exam. So what's even more frightening to me is that they have computer science in some of these places, and it's been disappearing. And that's often just one teacher, maybe, or two teachers that quit or retire, and there's nobody to take their place.
Well, are there pockets in the country that are doing better in this regard, and what's going on differently there?
Yes. So Tennessee actually was close to 30% female. And I think some of that could be traced to there is one teacher there at an all-girls school who does a great job in computer science. That's probably, unfortunately, the numbers are so low, the number of people who take the exam, that one teacher can make a huge difference. That's a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing that one teacher can make a difference, but it's bad that the numbers are so low that one teacher can really make a huge difference. So having computer science taught at an all-girls school and lots of girls taking it is probably the reason why Tennessee has close to 30%. Utah was only 4 females out of 100 and something. So Utah had the worst of the states that had at least, you know, more than 25 people taking the exam. So Utah had over 100 kids take the exam, but only 4 females. So I'd be curious what's going on in Utah.
Well, what about areas around Silicon Valley, for example? I mean, there's an area geographically that is very much associated to the tech industry. Is there more being done there in terms of outreach and education?
Well, California, you have to dig a little deeper. California had the most students who took the exam, but it is also a huge population. So if you look at number of people who take the exam divided by population, Maryland actually comes out on top. Maryland had the most people based on population take the exam, then Virginia, New Jersey, Massachusetts. So Silicon Valley, even though by numbers, you know, wow, okay, California had the most people take the exam, but California also has a huge population. So California is actually seventh if you look at it by population. And then diversity-wise, California didn't do as well as you'd like it to. You know, California is 30. One second, I have to pull that up to make sure. Look at the right thing here. It's over 30% Hispanic.
Well, I'll let you look at those statistics, and we'll get back to you just after this news break. And we invite you to join the conversation as well. What would make the tech industry a bit more attractive to you, and how would you encourage your friends to join you if you are someone who works with computers and in computer science? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm talking with Barbara Erickson, the Director of Computing Outreach at the College of Computing in Georgia Tech. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:36 on Wednesday, January 22nd. We're discussing the tech industry's gender and race gap this hour with Barbara Erickson, the Director of Computing Outreach at the College of Computing at Georgia Tech. She says the disparity begins in high school or even sooner. They start to see a dropout of girls, for example, in middle school. We hope you'll join the conversation. Why do you think that is? And what would make the tech industry more accessible to you? If you are part of the tech industry, what attracted you to it in the first place? What do you think people should know about it that you wish they had? Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Barbara, earlier we were talking about an increase of access to technology for young children. And, of course, you mentioned, too, the great impact that teachers can have in certain pockets of the country as well, and probably across the country as a whole. What does it take to make a good educator in the field of computer science?
Well, certainly they have to know the field. They have to. One of the problems we face is that schools confuse computer science with computer literacy, with teaching applications like Word or PowerPoint or Excel or keyboarding, even typing. And so if I'll say we need more computer science in schools, school boards will say, "Well, we have lots." And I say, "Well, what exactly do you have?" And they'll say, "Well, keyboarding and computer apps." And I'll say, "That's not computer science." So that's one of our issues. Is people, you know, have to understand what the difference between computer science is and just using a computer. It's not just using a computer. It's about learning how to make things with computers. And that's a big difference. So one of the problems we have is principals will send teachers to a one-week workshop to learn to teach advanced placement computer science, which at the college level will be taught by somebody with a PhD or a master's of computer science. And so I say, would you do that with Spanish? Would you send a teacher who knows no Spanish to a one-week workshop and think they could teach Spanish at a college level? So really, that wouldn't work. So it doesn't work in computer science either. So that's definitely an issue, that a teacher needs to know the field and know how to do it themselves, but they also have to know how to teach it. It's not enough to know it. There are some efforts in some states to have professionals come and teach computer science. So Microsoft started this program called TEALS, where they would have Microsoft professionals stop at a local high school and teach computer science before they'd head into work. And that's better than nothing, but that's also somewhat of an insult to the teachers who know how to teach. Mm. You know, people, just because you know a field doesn't mean you can teach it.
Well, and it sounds like another problem of supply. We've been talking about maybe a lack of supply to the industry of computer science developers, but even without that, how do you foster computer science educators?
That's a big problem because there's not very many pre-service programs that focus on computer science. Most states don't have any way to get certified to teach computer science, so it's not something that people are going to go to teaching school for. Occasionally, states will require if there's a math teacher that they take some computer science courses, but certainly not enough to be a master's degree level. In some countries, like in Israel, computer science is only taught, it is required in high school, and it's only taught by people who've majored in computer science. So we have a big difference between what we're doing and what Israel's doing.
I guess in what regard would diversity come into play here if we had, up the ante in terms of training our educators and making these classes more attractive? What would that mean in terms of the diverse student body?
So if you required if you require computer science is really how you're going to solve the diversity problem for sure. Math now, calculus, AP, was 48% female. And that's in part because colleges, it's not really required that everybody take calculus, but if you're going into a STEM field in college, you probably are going to take calculus in high school. So pretty much computer science should be there. That's where that's sort of my end goal, is we should be just as valued as calculus and just as important for any STEM field. But it shouldn't be just STEM fields. Computer science can be used in lots of fields. But if we can at least get there, I think we'd get parity as far as gender, and we'd do better for race. For race, we're really not going to solve that problem, I would say, until it's required for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it should be?
I do. I think it's become a foundational skill. Just like years ago, back in the Middle Ages, not everybody learned to read. Computer science is sort of like that now. Only a few people know computer science, but it should be a foundational skill. People should know a little bit about computer science, at least in any field.
We were talking about the AP computer science exam, which it sounds like that's your litmus test for how the industry is going to do in these areas of attracting women and racial minorities. Why is that exam important to you?
Well, a couple of reasons. Studies have shown that kids who take AP computer science are much more likely, 10 times as likely to major in the field, and they're much more likely to go on and take more computer science in college. Our big problems we have with computer science, as we've discussed, are the perception of it as something boring, antisocial, not creative, only for the geeky kids, or sometimes people will think the geek gene, you have to be born, knowing this stuff, which is totally not true. If we get people exposed earlier in high school, they can learn those things. They can learn that, hey, I can do this. It's not just for those people. It's not just those things. Whereas if we wait till college, people are picking their majors before they get to college. Why would you pick a major of a field that you don't know anything about and you have negative connotations for? So in Georgia Tech, we require everybody to take and pass computer science to graduate from Georgia Tech. And we have been for years. And we get women or men who are seniors at Georgia Tech before they take it because they're afraid of it or they're worried about it. They take it and they love it, and they say, I wish I would have taken this earlier and known that this would have been something I would have liked to have done.
Well, let me ask you a very basic question that it's the question that is driving this entire hour. Why is diversity important, and what exactly are we losing by not having more women or Hispanics or African Americans in the tech industry?
Well, you tend to design for people like yourself. So if your industry is mostly white male or Asian male, you're going to be designing for people like yourself, which is sort of an example of what happened in the game industry. It was mostly white and Asian males, and they designed games for themselves. They didn't think about designing for other people. In the car industry, I used to work at General Motors Research Labs. The designers are all male, or were many years ago when they were designing the airbags, and the first airbags were killing women and children, because they weren't thinking about, we need to think about women and children. There's multiple examples in technology where people are designing for like people like themselves and so leave out whole segments of population. The first voice recognizers didn't understand women's voices. Hmm. There was just this incident a year or two ago where a vision system wasn't seeing black people.
Wow.
They hadn't. So You know, so one of the real big factors is there have been studies that show that diverse teams make better products. And that's not a big surprise, right? Because you do tend to build stuff for people like yourself. If you don't have a diverse team, you miss half the population. You know, I have to laugh working for General Motors Research Labs for years where people were designing cars. There is no good place in a car for a woman's purse, and yet there's 18 cup holders.
My director, Robin Cherry, is behind the window saying, yep, that's true. She doesn't know where to put her purse on the way into work. Yeah. Well, you know, after the break, I want to ask you a couple of questions about how to pave the way for more diversity. You mentioned earlier that one of the obstacles might be the perception of a hostile work environment. And so let's talk about how to build a place where people will want to step into that door where they might feel that they're not welcome at this point. So we'll get back to that after the break. I'm talking to Barbara Erickson, the Director of Computing Outreach at the College of Computing in Georgia Tech. We're talking about the gender and race gap in the tech industry. We're also taking your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Barbara Erickson, the Director of Computing Outreach at the College of Computing at Georgia Tech, about the racial and gender disparity in the computer science industry and what to do about it. Are you in the computer science industry? Do you study it? Do you teach it? Do you work with it? Please let us know. 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Barbara, as I mentioned, I'm curious how you would say the first steps should be taken in terms of making the industry or perhaps the classroom more inviting to women and minorities.
Well, some of the problems are the stereotypes that people have, and they'll sometimes even subtly discourage people that they don't think will make a good fit in computer science. I've heard talk of counselors, even high school counselors, telling girls that have been on robotics teams for years that they shouldn't take AP computer science, that they'd be better off taking AP statistics or something else. So there's a whole campaign to try to inform counselors about computer science because they do dissuade people from taking it. They're somewhat gatekeepers. There's an attempt, you know, teachers have to encourage them, students, especially females and underrepresented minorities. We have found that if teachers recruit females and underrepresented minorities, so that's a big thing that teachers can do, hand-deliver letters to students, pick student leaders and ask them to bring their friends. Women often like to travel in packs, so they don't want to be the only, unless there's occasionally women that don't mind being the only woman in a whole room of guys, but most women would prefer to be in a group. So making sure that when you encourage women, you encourage an entire group. In a classroom, try not to break up the women. Sometimes that's what teachers will do is say, oh, let's divide all the women up and pair them up all with the guys. Well, you know, let them work in teams together if they want. Encourage all female teams in robotic competitions. So try to grow your robotic competitions to include females. And especially you can sell it to females by saying we can build things that can help people. So creating projects that are about helping people rather than very abstract and math-based. A lot of computer science examples come from math, and sometimes that's not as interesting. It'll be things like Fibonacci sequences or temperature conversion. Try to do something that your students are actually interested in. You know, make music, use media, do lots of interesting things.
Let's take a call from Lynn in Milwaukee. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Good morning. I was really enjoying listening to your topic this morning. I work a lot with middle school students. I agree very much. I was just listening to your last comments that a lot of the different competitions they have, especially for middle school students, really help them get interested. And I've seen a lot more girls involved in some of the classes and some of the competitions. Like you said, the robotics competitions are really good. I work with a group called the National Fluid Power Association, and we've seen a lot of bigger numbers in the Fluid Power Challenge, which is a competition that we have for middle school students. And girls teams, all girl teams, do really well. And so it's really exciting to see that, but we definitely need more coming to the competitions.
That's great. You want to encourage
one
that.
Of the other things, yeah. One of the other things I just want to say too is that a lot of times if you let students know, especially in middle schools, what they can do with, you know, in my case, it's fluid power and engineering and the STEM programs, but what they can do with it, it becomes more real to them, you know, that they can design roller coasters, that they can work on things like the Art Museum, that they can help people with disabilities with this career. And I think that also helps, that it's imagination, it's collaboration, and the kind of words we use.
Yes. Yeah, the words that girls associate with computing are boring, typing, hard, right? You want to change those to, hey, it's really exciting, interesting, cool.
Well, one perception about that, about the industry, is that if I get a job in the computer science field, I will be sitting at a desk all by myself all day in front of a computer screen. Is that a misperception? And could you provide maybe some examples of the jobs or types of creations that come out of the computer science field that we may not be thinking about?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of diverse jobs in the field. That is a huge misconception that you're going to sit behind a keyboard all day, all by yourself. And I've been in the field for over 30 years, and I almost never do that. So very rarely am I stuck by myself working at my computer for long periods of time. It's just that's not the way the industry works. But that is a misperception. And many of the jobs don't require that. So I was a software engineer, and you go out and you talk with the users and you interview people and you talk about what their needs are. And so there are lots of jobs that are very heavily involved with working with the public. Of course, teaching is another one in computer science. If you're teaching computer science, you're certainly working with people. There's database administrators. There's a lot of different jobs in computing. So people who create sort of the way that we store data and figure out how that's organized. There's network people who work about how to keep your network secure. The security is a big and growing area. They're desperate for more U.S. nationals in the security field because, of course, so much data is online these days and subject to attack. So people can work in the security field. People can work in medical fields with computer science. So much of medicine is based in computer science. I actually worked on a national knowledge medical bank where we followed around brain surgeons because we were working on a case-based reasoning system to help doctors diagnose strokes and brain tumors. We have to follow doctors around for days and pretend we were doctors. And, computer science to me is so much fun because there's so many different things you could apply it to.
Wow. So yeah, that's a diverse array of opportunities there that I certainly hadn't considered. Thanks for that call, Lynn. Let's talk to Brent in Heartland. Hi, Brent.
Howdy.
What's your question?
I had a comment. I'm an IT professional, and throughout the years, probably for the last 20 years or so, and from time to time, I've also been a teacher in the industry, but mostly to other professionals. My comment is that one of the problems with the industry, well, actually just with a lot of this stuff in general, is that it's hard to get teachers that are IT savvy, partly because it just pays better to be an engineer or an analyst or a designer or a developer than it does to be a teacher, especially at the sub-collegiate level.
What do you say to that, Barbara?
Well, that is definitely a problem, right? We had a project at Georgia Tech called Operation Reboot to retrain unemployed IT workers during the big recession to be high school computing teachers. And the first group that we ran through that program all went back to IT because they'd been unemployed for years and they were in bad financial straits. So even though some of them wanted to continue to be teachers, they said they just couldn't. Now, by the third year that we ran it, most of them stayed in teaching. You know, teachers don't go into teaching to make money. They know that this is not a field that's going to make a lot of money. So I definitely have seen the opposite happen as well. I've seen IT people who have made money at their career who decide that they want to do something, they want to teach, they want to do something more personally rewarding for themselves. So they go back and start teaching. So I've seen it both ways. I think we would definitely lose people to IT, but we also definitely get people from IT who want to be teachers.
Thanks for that call, Brent. I wanted to ask you, Barbara, you obviously are a woman who has been in that industry. What first attracted you to it, and how did you defy the stereotypes?
That's a good question. In high school, I had a basic programming class. Back then, we didn't even have computers in our classrooms, of course. We had to use a dial-up to get to the local college one. So I took it in high school. That wasn't what I was planning to major in. I was going to be a vet or a lawyer. But then when I went to college, I found that a lot of people had changed majors partway through and had to go to school longer. So I decided to double major, political science and computer science, which used to confuse people. They would say, what are those have in common? And I would say, well, nothing really, except you write a lot in both. But and eventually I did co-op, actually in Milwaukee, for the Forest Service in computer science, and decided that's what I wanted to do as my career. So I found it interesting. I like solving problems. That's one of the things that I find really fascinating about computer science, is it's really fun to solve problems and solve problems for people. So I enjoy working on, you know, trying to detect brain tumors and strokes. You're always learning something. It's really interesting. And then you're trying to create things that could really make a difference in the world.
Let's try to sneak in one last call. We only have a couple of minutes left, Jim, but we're going to talk to Jim in Cedarburg. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. I come from the perspective of a substitute teacher before I became a teacher, and I saw firsthand what happens in these specials classes, including computers. First of all, like the last caller said, principals really are just happy to land a competent person in those classrooms to teach. So they kind of like leave them alone, hands-off sort of approach. And that's the worst thing they can do, because these people who have the experience in the field, they don't really have the classroom management skills, the discipline that kids need, especially in middle school, which suffers from what I call the alpha male syndrome. In other words, there's generally one boy in particular who sets the tone, especially, and you really see it when the substitute comes into the classroom. So that makes it a very much a turnoff for young women, because at this time they're very insecure themselves. But here's three things that parents and business people can do.
Oh, Jim, I wish we had time for those three things, but we only have a minute left for you to respond to that, Barbara.
Oh, he's right, that teachers need to know how to keep that situation from happening, from letting the males take over and make it a very hostile environment. But that does take training.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you look back at your own experience, Barbara, what is one piece of advice you'd like to give to women or to Hispanics or African Americans who might be interested in it but haven't given computer science a fair shot yet?
They could check out the tutorials on code.org, the Hour of Code. They created a whole bunch of online tutorials to get people interested in computer science. They could look at their local areas for computing summer camps or courses that they might take.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. That was Barbara Erickson. She is the Director of Computing Outreach at the College of Computing at Georgia Tech, talking about the tech industry's race and gender divide. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Joy Cardine. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this hour, and Marika Suval for on-air production. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.